Learn live in the classroom at Online Trading Academy's Financial Education Center in Bellevue. You'll have access to state-of-the-art workstations where you can learn on a professional trading platform. Text Cairo to 57682 to register for a free half-day workshop and learn more.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Car Subaru Studios and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. It's the start of a new week, the dawn of a new era. Welcome to this Monday afternoon edition of the Dory Monson Show. What a weekend. Man, it was just gorgeous this weekend.
My favorite kind of weekend.
Oh, couldn't have been lovelier. I went out golfing Saturday morning, which I hardly ever do anymore. But just golfing in the sun was fantastic.
This is what you call a Chamber of Commerce kind of weekend.
Yeah, it was lovely.
Everyone would want to move here.
Yeah, well, no, please. The last thing we need. Nobody should want to move here.
I said they'd want to.
I know, but we don't want them to. Just stay away is the bottom line here. Okay, we've got a lot of news to get to, including this compromise that shows the absolute weakness of our local politicians. Let's get right to our top story.
The Big Lead. Top story.
So I want to make sure I understand this. So last week, Jenny Durkin, first of all, the Seattle City Council had proposed a $540 per employee head tax. Then Jenny Durkin said, let's cut it in half to $250 per person. And now their compromise was $275 per person. And so they have enough. They didn't vote yet today, did they?
No, that's going to happen at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
So, but of right now, so they discussed it. So apparently Lorena Gonzalez and the mayor had worked on this compromise. It has the support, it appears, of everyone on the council with the exception of Shama Samant.
Okay. All right. So it's being billed as a compromise. But as I told you on Friday, a head tax is either a good idea or it's a bad idea. And it's a bad idea. Because to tax business, and I want you to think about this. Forget about the companies that are here. It would be cost prohibitive for Amazon to pull up stakes and leave Seattle because there would be a local real estate market collapse. They are sitting on billions of dollars of downtown real estate. Amazon's not going to pull out. But I want you to think about the next 5, 10, 20 years. Any business in the country that is thinking about starting in Seattle or moving to Seattle, which has by a factor of more than 10 times the highest employee head tax in the country, why would any business, knowing what we know today, why would any business choose to relocate or start up in Seattle? If you have a company with 20 employees and you could be in Seattle and tax yourselves thousands of dollars a year, or you could go to Shoreline right across the border and not have that tax, of course you go to Shoreline then, or to Bellevue, or to Renton. You're not going to do it in Seattle. And so this is one of a million reasons why this head tax is horrible policy. When you punish companies for creating jobs, for creating wealth, for creating the tax base that is necessary so buffoons like our city council members can collect a salary, it's bad policy. And for Durkin to say, well, we'll just cut it in half. Now, if it's a bad policy, it's a bad policy when it's cut in half, too. And then we'll add $25. Still bad policy. And so that is where we are. They're going to vote this afternoon. It's horrible policy for the city and for the region because it does have and will have a ripple effect. And whenever the economy turns south, Seattle's going to be hit harder than any city in our country's history. Oh, I like this moment, though, when Sally Bagshaw called out Shama Samant this morning because Samant, she's making her little propaganda socialist communist signs, and she's using the printer at City Hall for her personal crusade, which means the taxpayers get to foot the bill for her personal propaganda. And so here's the little bit of the back and forth between those two.
So I have something I would just like to briefly say, Councilmember Sawant, when you talked with some pride about 200 people showing up, I want to say that I do not share the anti-business animus that I feel that you are sponsoring. And I also want to acknowledge that on multiple occasions, I've seen your staff using our copiers to print your signs. Most recently, the Tax Amazon by the Affordable Housing Alliance. I just don't think it is right for us to be using city resources or the copy machines to promote something that not all of us agree to.
Okay, now this is a really good point. That this is some, you know, outside agitator group that Sawant's a part of, and she's letting the taxpayers of Seattle pay for the propaganda on the copier in the office. And the other people, and it is purely an anti-business, anti-capitalism organization. And so the taxpayers of Seattle get to foot the bill for Sawant. Why can't she go to Kinko's for her personal stuff? Why can't her staffers go to Kinko's for her? Her little toadies. But, and then Sawant, she didn't really even want to address that.
To promote something that not all of us agree to.
Okay.
There's Bruce Harrell, who sounds really uncomfortable that Sawant got called out for using the copier.
Okay. Show some leadership. You could restrain. I mean, go ahead and respond. I didn't realize you were going to get in there. I'm going to turn right to EHG in a minute here. Go ahead.
Well, I didn't ask Councilmember Backshaw to say what
it.
She said.
I get it. I didn't know she was going to say that. So.
What a bunch of clods. I mean, there's just no social ability with any of them. That just uncomfortable. Well, I didn't know she was going to say that. Big pauses. They just sound like, you know, I got an email from a listener this morning who wrote, priceless city council meeting. Kashama is using the city printer for her propaganda. Sally doesn't like that. And once again, these people are the most inarticulate dolts ever. And that's from listener Linda. And it's true. It's just, you got to hear that exchange one more time. Bagshaw finishing up. Bruce Harrell and Sawant trying to decide if there should be a response.
To promote something that not all of us agree to.
Okay. show some leadership. You could restrain. I mean, go ahead and respond. I didn't realize you were going to get in there. I'm going to turn right to EHG in a minute here. Go ahead.
Well, I didn't ask Councilmember Backshaw to say what she said.
I get it. I didn't know she was going to say that.
They are. They're inarticulate dolts. Linda had the right phrasing for that.
I don't want to respond at length. I just wanted to say that she is absolutely welcome to her opinion. And actually, I appreciate her being honest and open about this. I would urge all council members to openly state where they stand. And while I do not agree at all with Councilmember Backshaw's opinion, I think that's a...
What don't you agree with? Are you claiming you're not anti-business? Does your staff not use the printer? What do you mean you don't agree with anything she said? She said you are fundamentally anti-business, which clearly you are, and your staff using the printer is either a fact or it's not. How do you disagree with that stuff?
Rare occasion when a politician has come out and spoken which side they're on. The animus, as Councilmember Backshaw talks about, is the
what was that little phrase there?
Is
I think I got my new Sawant drop as we go into the months to come. Councilmember Sawant, what do you think about this issue?
Is
yeah, I'm going to use that one a lot.
the struggle of working people to find affordable housing in this city. And as a matter of fact, our Affordable Housing Alliance and our housing movement has been the most vocal in...
No, I can't listen to this. It's just painful. Painful. Except for the parts that I love the most.
Is the...
Yeah, I like that part. So that's what's going on today. It's a horrible tax, and it's a bad idea. Jenny Durkin is proving to be a spineless leader, or not a leader at all. The city council, they are inarticulate. They don't know what they're going to do with the money. They have completely missed the mark on what they have to do, which is drug treatment, mental health counseling, job training. That's how they can change lives. You should not provide people a place to live where they can continue to shoot up heroin and smoke meth and smoke weed, drink themselves to death. If you're going to provide them with housing, you need to offer them drug and alcohol treatment, mandate urine tests so that we know that they're clean, and if not, then we cannot provide them with taxpayer-funded housing. Then you give them 6 months. You give them an address for prospective employers to track them down. You work with businesses. You offer tax breaks to businesses that help people transition from homeless to gainfully employed. You get those people clean. You get them their life back. That's how we should be dealing with this. What the city is doing is 180 degrees the wrong direction, but that is why, even before this tax increase, we're already spending more per capita on homelessness than any city in the United States of America. It has never been about a lack of tax dollars. It has always, always, always been a lack of purpose and focus and human compassion. Politicians just want money. They do not want to solve the lives of people who are addicted out on the streets. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead. Your tax dollars at work.
Oh, but speaking of Seattle mismanaging things, great story in the Seattle Times about a coming bomb to the taxpayers. Seattle City employees have a very generous pension plan. And pension plans have largely disappeared in the private sector. Although, full disclosure, my employer, Cairo and Bonneville, they have a pension plan. We're one of the few employers that still offers a pension plan in the private sector. Government is really the last vestige of pension plans. There's only one problem. The people who have been managing the Seattle Retirement Fund are doing a woefully inept job. They have lots of risky investments that have turned out to be worth less than what they paid. And think about what a great time this has been for the stock market the last few years. If you just were an index investor in the S&P 500 or the Russell 2000, you'd be doing fine, better than fine. But the Seattle City Employees Retirement System, it is in the bottom 3% of state and city pensions in the United States of America. 97% of city and state pension funds are outperforming Seattle's. And do you know what that means? Well, they were projecting a 7.5% annual return, but they've only made 4.1%. So they are now $1 billion short in their retirement obligations. $1 billion short. Who are they going to come to make up that? Well, the taxpayers, of course. But it's a great in-depth Seattle Times story. But it talks about the people who have been managing this fund, how woefully inept they've been, how horribly underperforming it is, And now it's looking like it's going to be a $1 billion bombshell that's going to be dropped on the taxpayers. I'm going to give you more details on this in the days to come because I'm working some other angles on this story. But what do we do well here with city government? When they do the seawall project, that goes $100 million over budget. The Seattle Tunnel is going to be $1 billion over budget when it's all tallied up. The streetcar system, they've had to pull the plug because that was tens of millions of dollars over budget. What do we do well here in local government? And I'm serious about this. Besides painting crosswalks rainbow colors, name something that Seattle has done well as a local government. Because it's getting tough. And I'm talking about major projects. But the seawall, the streetcars, the tunnel, the bicycle ripoff. Now what they're doing with the road diets. Now we find out the managers of their pension fund, bottom 3% in the country. What a woefully inept region we have around here. All right, next up in the big lead.
The big lead. Hey, how'd this get in here?
Well, I got one quick national story because we're just getting numbers from the Congressional Budget Office. You and I have paid more in taxes to the United States federal government than at any time in our history. April tax collections were up 12%. Or $55 billion versus a year ago. Why can't we pay down this deficit? Why does government have to keep spending beyond its means? They're collecting record tax revenues. And then what does Nancy Pelosi say? If the Democrats regain power in the in Congress?
That you would like to institute a single-payer health care program and cancel, raise taxes. I think they mean roll back the tax cuts that they passed this year. Is that, what do you make of that?
Well, the second part there is accurate. I do think that we should revisit tax legislation in the way that we always have, in a bipartisan, transparent way.
Is that really a selling point for your party? You're collecting more tax money from the people than ever before in your nation's history, and you're going to try to regain Congress by jacking up taxes even more. Man, I wish somebody would come along, including Trump, and say we're going to dramatically cut government spending, combine that with these tax revenues, and we're going to start reducing the $20 trillion in debt, which is the greatest threat to our nation's future. But when Pelosi says, yeah, the Democrats are going to run on raising taxes, it's just pure insanity. It's also your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
It's Monday afternoon, and that means it's a good time for a visit with the Monday Munson quarterback. Brock Heward will join us. The Seahawks lost a coaching legend over the weekend. And is the Supreme Court going to make it easier for you to gamble on sports from the comfort of your living room? All of that straight ahead when Brock Heward joins us next. Hey, thanks for listening to the Dory Monson Show podcast, brought to you by Industrious Office. If you are on the search for your business's next home, there's simply no hotter place in the country than downtown Seattle right now. I went on a tour with Emily at Industrious Office. It's an amazing workspace right on 6th and Lenora in the heart of all that Seattle has to offer. Visit industriousoffice.com/Cairo or call Emily to schedule a tour. Mention Cairo, receive your first month lease for free.
Hey there, you're listening to Dory. Did you know that your customers do too? Why don't you advertise here? Give me a call and I'll help you out. Tina Sorensen, General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio, 206-726-6819.
It is Monday afternoon, and that means it's time for the Monday Monson quarterback, the great Brock Heward joins us. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Dory. I don't know about great.
Yeah. You're great. You're a great man.
Yeah,
in so many ways.
I don't know about that.
You're as beautiful on the inside as you are on the outside.
Oh, thank you, Dory.
And that's a high bar to cross.
All I know is come next Monday, we're going to have a whole lot of talking to do. Because by next Monday, you're going to have, one of yours married off.
Isn't that something?
And I'm going to be putting on a show.
Isn't that something?
At the reception, just to let you know.
Are you going to put on a show the way you do when you go to girls' basketball games?
I might, Dory.
Just get out of hand.
I might be sobbing and crying.
Out of control.
And I can't wait to see you, too.
Oh, man. And no recording devices allowed.
Oh, really? You're going to drop the phones off?
Yeah. I think I'm going to have I should do that. I should have no recording devices allowed.
I had not been to a wedding reception with that, but that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Just put a big old couple boxes at the door.
Yeah.
Pretty important people in here like me, so don't record me, Dory Monson.
Then I'd hire an artist to do artist renderings, and that'd be the only record of the event. A couple of things. I want to talk about Chuck Knox passing, but a big Supreme Court decision today saying that states can legalize sports betting.
Yeah.
And Brock, this is a multi-billion dollar industry when it was underground.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring it above ground, and it's going to do two things. It'd throw off tremendous tax revenues for the states.
Yep.
It will wipe out a lot of families that are addicted to sports gambling.
I don't think there's any question about either of those things. And I think many of the states, as I understand this, are already lined up to take advantage. In those states being Connecticut, Mohegan Sun and the huge gaming industry, Atlantic City and New Jersey, Mississippi. And those states all have had bills in their house ready to go on this. And so I think they're going to see that and feel that first. Our state will be fascinating. How do you anticipate our state handling this? Because as of now, you do not have a bill that is, in place to, get this thing going at CenturyLink Field or Safeco Field and to get that whole process started tomorrow.
Not only do we not have a bill, but we have the toughest gambling laws in the country, where if you play 25-cent Texas Hold'em, you can go to prison for 10 years. Oh. It's a felony offense. You can drive drunk and wipe out a family of four people and serve less time than what is the maximum sentence for playing 25-cent poker online.
Why do I just feel like I stepped into your lair?
Well, it's...
You know this inside and out.
I was all over this because the state senator who took buyouts from existing gambling interests to craft that law, and because of that, they have made this...
So are we going to see this? What's it going to be? 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? Are we going to see this state that so desperately needs its revenue, like every one of these states out there? Are we going to see this state change course
with the passionate need revenue.
I mean, with the passionate sports fans that you have here, I think that Emerald Downs does all right down the road, right? I think it sees some pretty good action.
What'll be interesting will be to see if the tribes tested first, because if you put a giant sports book at Tulalip or at at Snoqualmie, one of those, Emerald Queen, you put a big sports book there, it'll generate a fortune. And that's where the state needs to figure out, are we going to compete with them? Are we going to get our share of the pie? Or are we going to let this enormous stream of money just go to the tribes?
And then the other aspect of it in our world, right? And that's a little bit in your world. In our world is the sports and the organizations, the Seahawks, the way they run their business, and the Mariners, the way they run their business, and their leagues. And Major League Baseball and the NFL, Dory, and the MLS and the WNBA and all the other sports and all the other leagues, how will they handle this? I personally think the NBA will be out front in leading the pack and leading the charge.
Well, they've already announced it, and the PGA Tour has also announced that they would be fine with that. So, and it's inevitable. It's inevitable. So now the question is, are you going to craft it in a way so that you can be your own watchdog? Because some of the biggest sports gambling scandals in college sports history, it was the Vegas casinos that rang the alarm and said, we're seeing unusual betting patterns, and that's how they made those busts. So they can regulate their own industry, but it's going to be tougher and tougher in college sports, man, which is your world.
Yes, it is.
Where the players aren't getting paid?
Yes, it is. And no surprise to see the South trying to push some of that action. Louisiana, Mississippi, and some of those states down there that want to get into the... Yeah, and I don't know, Dory. I, obviously, morally and in many ways, I don't gamble. I've not gambled. I don't feel comfortable doing it. It's illegal for me as a player, as an analyst, and doing all that. And I'm just, I'm not comfortable in that way. But you said it earlier. The other part that's hard is to see that, and you know, that addiction is going to ruin people's lives. People are going to get into this thing.
Yeah.
And they already are anyway, but it's going to now be, you know, I think it will be accelerated, especially come the sports world, come some of those passionate sports fans. Then that kind of addiction and that kind of brokenness is hard for me to absorb.
Yeah, no, I get that. Okay, the other big news, Seahawk legendary coach Chuck Knox passed away this weekend. Long battle with dementia, but man, you know, the guys who are my friends who played for him, Paul Moyer, Dave Wyman, he was one of those guys whose legacy will go on and on and on.
Yeah, he just cut through some of that old guard, Dory, and you know this, and when you were covering sports on our side for all those years as well, and you still do the pre and the post, the old guard was all fear-based, mm-hmm. intimidation.
Right.
And no water out here, right? I'm just going to just kind of that militaristic. And I've talked to Pete, as you have as well, Coach Carroll, and how different some of his mindset was. But Chuck was one of those guys in that old guard that could still gain respect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of it was fear and fear and fear. But yeah, can you still connect with me though? And we had Dave Wyman on today. You'll talk to Dave, I'm sure, a ton. And he has so many stories of Chuck pulling the bus over and stopping at the store to pick up beers for the guys and just still finding a level of respect and relationship. And that's why he won. That's why he was a coach of the year three different times with three different organizations and saw so much success. He's still one of the 10 winningest coaches in the 98-year history of the NFL. And that ability, sure, if you're going to rule with some fear and intimidation, you still got to be able to connect and build relationship. And he seemingly walked that line pretty well.
Well, I said on Twitter that I hear Dave and Paul quoting Chuck Knox, and they will quote him to their kids. And their kids will quote them, not even knowing who the source was. And in that way, coaches live on. And, you know, your dad has touched so many lives. And I had a guy that I coached with when we won the state championship. And he passed away 15 days after we won the championship. And when I talked him into coaching with me, because he knew he had leukemia, he said, the reason I do this, Dory, is because if we can teach these kids something and they teach their kids that same thing, in that way, in a small way, we become immortal.
Yeah.
Your words just live on generationally. And I always thought that was cool, and I always thought that coaches hold kind of a special place in people's lives in that regard.
Yeah, that web of influence.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
That center of it, like that spider web that just go. You hear a coaching tree, but I think it's much more like a web. And to your point, Frosty Westring comes to mind.
Oh, yeah.
And we've had some great ones in this community, man, in all of the different sports. But, yeah, Chuck Knox will be missed. In talking to Dave and some of those, they knew this was coming. He'd been battling dementia for a number of years. Yeah. He was no longer, you know, the capable communicator that he was years and years ago, for decades to so many.
Right.
But his web of influence isn't going away anytime soon.
I got to hear this audio you played. This is the promo for the old Chuck Knox
show. Speaking
of
a different time and era and making your picks. Yeah, this was...
Every Monday night, I can show you what's important on the field and off. Seahawks strategies. Player profiles, my picks for next week. And to make sure no one's just sitting on the sidelines, I want you to make the calls.
What was the bell? Is that him picking up a telephone there?
Yeah.
Nice.
I'll give you, Coach Carroll is going to give you his picks
my
for next
picks.
Weekend.
He's picking other NFL games? Oh, man.
Yeah, you got to go back and find those. You could stack up Coach Knox and the Nuns.
Yeah.
See who picked better.
His little Knoxism.
You know that if you prepare well, your team is probably going to play well. You're not always going to win, but they're going to play hard. And they're going to go out there and give good performance. You can live
Tony.
With that.
Just a simple message.
Just a simple man.
Yeah.
Playing a simple game and impacting a lot of people for a lot of years.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so Chuck Knox will be missed. Okay, we'll have a lot to talk about next Monday.
You're going to have to come on. What time do you get up?
6:30.
Can you come on our morning show at some point this week? You seem to know this little gambling legislation deal.
I know it really well.
Yeah, we need an insider. Can you be our gaming insider?
I'd be happy to.
All right,
yeah,
good.
Yeah,
we'll book you.
You just give me a call. All right, Brock Huard is the Monday Monson quarterback. Thank you, sir.
Always fun, Dory.
Much more to come straight ahead. It's the Dory Monson Show.
Roll zone.
Several years ago, a far left newspaper columnist in town for no reason at all, except that he disagreed with my position on issues. But he just became obsessed with me and my show, and he would drop in little references to my show in his columns all the time. And then he wrote a column about how much he hated my show. And at first, I fought back, because that's what I tend to do. And you'll notice I usually don't take on media people, because they're all, you know, they can have their own opinion. And just because I disagree with their opinion, I don't spend all day talking about other hosts on this radio station who have different opinions from me. But there are a lot of people in the media. That's what they do. They just pick out somebody in the media with whom they disagree, and then they obsess over that person. And then I stopped mentioning this person's name because they became so irrelevant. But I have to admit, I was a little bit curious this weekend when at the Seattle PI, they had a story, a headline, written by that columnist, Joel Connolly. And the headline was, Ed Murray, head tax would let feds and state off the hook on homelessness. And I was thinking, really? We're turning to a accused child rapist now to get opinions about public policy? So, but then I couldn't read the column because they had underneath the headline, editor's note. This column went up earlier today. It did not meet our editorial standards. It has been removed. We apologize for missing the mark. So somebody correctly at the PI, and whatever's left of the PI, they only have, and I mean this seriously, I think they only have about four or five people left at this operation, what used to be this Heritage newspaper, and there's just nothing there. And their website is horribly annoying. You just get lost in ads and click. It's a nightmare. But Joel Connolly, and he was so out of touch when he was writing and obsessing about me and my show that we had a Joel Connolly theme song for a while.
Marshall, Will, and Holly on the routine expedition at the greatest earthquake ever known.
Because Joel Connolly was just such a dinosaur even 20 years ago when he was obsessed with me and my show, that the Land of the Lost theme seemed to be just perfect for him. Yeah! So, anyway, our colleague Jason Rance, he found the original Connolly column that the PI wouldn't run, and he noted, in an interview, Ed Murray asked to be limited to homelessness and drug abuse, not the decades-old molestation allegations that drove him from office. Murray critiqued the $500 per employee head tax being pushed by city council members. And it got back to, if you're a far lefty like Joel Connolly, you're willing to accept the likelihood that Ed Murray is a child rapist and reach out to him to get his opinion about the head tax? Which gets back to, for too many people in politics and in the media, they're comfortable with child rape as long as it's a Democrat doing the child raping. Then, oh yeah, let's turn to him for some public policy expertise. Unbelievable. At least the editors had some common sense at the PI to pull that thing. Fast 15 next.